and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Last week's U.S.-China summit is now history. What exactly history will make of the meeting between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping will take longer to assess. Few details of their face-to-face talks have been released, and the summit itself quickly gave way to events in Syria and Egypt. Going into the summit, Pacific Forum Executive Director Brad Glosserman had a much more negative outlook of its substance and tenor. We met earlier today, and I asked him what turned around to make it a more positive experience than he originally envisioned.
I think there were a couple of factors. Number one, I think it was called in the previous, a couple of administrations ago, the bigotry of low expectations. I think that if you really were to measure by most benchmarks, we would say that the summit was done. It was completed, and we can discuss if you wanted more detail the particular deliverables. They're not terribly impressive. I think the fact that we were so concerned that many people on so many levels were worried about what would come out of this, and even if I think I was more negative than most, but not all. The fact of the matter is that that managed to lower the expectations sufficiently that getting through it without fireworks was considered to be a pretty good thing. And the second piece of that, of course, would be the fireworks, which is the Syrian attack. And that changed the conversation. And that's the subject, if you will, of a deeper dive in and of itself. But I think that has managed to overshadow the summit. I was reading an analysis this morning from one of the blogs I always look at that I consider an extremely thoughtful analyst. And his comment sort of was, wasn't there a summit last weekend? There was no discussion of that.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit, because it seemed that it was quite eclipsed, or at least greatly overshadowed by what happened in Syria, and also the fact that we are getting so few details about what they actually talked about and what those deliverables to the summit might be. How much of one impacted the other?
There clearly was a relationship. The fact of the matter is, as best I can figure, there were very few deliverables. If Trump and company had been watching another president hold this particular meeting and looking at these outcomes, they would dismiss it, as the word these days is, a nothing burger. That there really was nothing. There was interesting and candid conversations, or frank, I think, and candid or interesting, which basically meant they came to no agreement. There was a discussion of a larger set, a comprehensive U.S.-China comprehensive dialogue, which essentially encompasses dialogues that already exist. They said that what distinguishes this is that it moves it up to a more senior level, considering that the former strategic and economic dialogue, which was the ultimate sort of level of comprehensive discussion, was led by cabinet secretaries of Treasury and the Secretary of State. That means that the president's overlooking this, which is what they were doing previously. I don't think he'll be running these four dialogues, so that suggests no real change. There is this larger 100-day roadmap for an economic agreements, which, according to the presser that was held after the summit, even the way station on that are yet to be set. There were, in fact, none of the usual gifts from the Chinese president that he would give to his American counterpart. The fact of the matter is that there just wasn't much on the table. And what's been explained, acknowledged, or presented as the big move is that, yes, we created a tone and a relationship, which, again, relates, I think, essentially to the sets of expectations that were created before this, when Mr. Trump, both as a candidate previously when he was just a citizen, and in his tweet, of course, the week before the meeting about how we're going to have a very difficult conversation, suggests that things were going to be difficult. And yet, we got through it without any major gaffes and without any major breakdowns like folks like I had feared, and thus we consider this a success. Then to go to your question about Syria, that becomes the thing that certainly all the press wishes to talk about, because that is so unclear and so uncertain and represents such a reversal as well. And then, of course, there is the very obvious question of whether it is signaling to China a possible American response.
Or to North Korea.
To North Korea. And thus, and which with the dispatch and the deployment of the Carl Vinson carrier strike group to the Korean Peninsula, which is now all over the news again, what is, I think, in some ways a fairly routine deployment, in the sense that if you have a crisis, you frequently send a carrier strike group into the area. Nevertheless, we're seeing this in conjunction and put all together as signaling something dire is coming. What that then means is that the conversations, that the substance of the meetings are overshadowed by the larger implications of these moves elsewhere in the world.
Given the fact that this summit happened so quickly in the first 100 days of the Trump administration, was that something you think had great import in making this, as you called it, a nothing burger?
Yes. Not only in the fact that you normally have months, if not years, of preparation for this, you certainly didn't have the staffing on the U.S. side to really adequately prepare the principals, as though, quite frankly, though, the president would have been staffed and briefed in ways that would have changed his performance. So without question, the speed, the early point in the administration, and the inability, I think, of the Americans to bring the full intellectual firepower to bear on these questions has a significant bearing.
So here we are now with not a whole lot that came out of this summit, except maybe much more of a show than anything else, clearly overshadowed by what happened in Syria. But now we do have an issue with North Korea. Not a whole lot of indication that the Chinese would be willing to put a little bit of pressure on North Korea in the way that the United States would like. Not a whole lot of discussion about really what trade may look like. At this point, was it even worth it to have this summit?
To the degree that it allayed some deeper concerns about what Mr. Trump's intentions are, to the degree that Xi and Trump could have a conversation, lay their thoughts on the table, develop a relationship, all of those things are positive. It's always good when leaders meet. The concerns that we have are that this administration and this president are so unpredictable that you did not know that the easy stuff would actually be easy to do. There was great fear that we were going to blow things up, and as a result, things would be worse. We dodged that bullet, and thus it's a good thing that the meeting was held.
At this point, though, we don't seem to know what the future may look like. And you mentioned the unpredictability of this administration, the fact that we saw, you know, invectives by tweet happening during the run-up to the election, certainly after the election. And now it seems to be a sense of we're going to be good friends and go at this together. But that's, you know, that's just in a way very much the rhetorical speak that we would expect to hear. Is there any sense that you have, being more on the inside than most of us are, or having a viewpoint with a long history behind it, that we should be looking out to see how this relationship develops, and in particular, what it would mean for issues like North Korea and trade?
Predictions are hard, especially about the future, I think, is the Yogi Berra quote. I think the logic that drove me to write the piece in the first place that it was responsible for bringing me into your studio this morning still exists, and namely that is a profound difference in views of North Korea and the most superficial, I think, of shared objectives. Misunderstandings about the nature of Chinese preferences, outcomes, and influence in Pyongyang will continue to be an important and dividing factor in the way that we approach the Korean Peninsula problems. Laid on top of that is going to be a question now about how the president feels about uses of force and the degree to which the applause that he's received for his moves over the week or last week will then shape him and make him perhaps quicker or less reluctant to use force in the future, which I think would be a huge mistake, certainly in the North Korean case at this point. On the economic question again, I have doubts about the understanding, certainly of the president, in regard to the workings of the international economic system. His insistence, his focus on the trade deficit, his focus upon manufacturing jobs and industries that are probably gone, all of that suggests that there are fundamental gaps between the way the world works and the way he thinks it works. And thus, his attempts, if you will, in particular his attempts to drive down trade deficits with all of our major trading partners, is going to create great friction in the future.
All part of the presidential learning curve, perhaps.
Without question. We're in for an interesting next couple of years.
Which means we'll have some more conversations along the way. But
always
thank you for
a pleasure.
This one.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you again.
Brad Glosserman is Executive Director of the Pacific Forum CSIS in Honolulu. It's an independent program of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. The Pacific Forum has provided policy-oriented analysis and promoted dialogue on regional security, political, economic, and environmental issues in the Asia-Pacific region since 1975.